Well, good afternoon. It's Hebrew Club from Concordia Seminary, and we're looking today at the continuation of the narrative in 1 Samuel 14. Last week we got up through verse 12, where Jonathan and his armor bearer are resolving to go up themselves against a garrison of the Philistines. The whole army of Saul is encamped and is fearful because of the huge number of Philistines that's gathered. And unbeknownst to anyone in the camp, at least to Saul for sure, Jonathan and his armor bearer have snuck out and decided to venture against the Philistines single-handedly, in a sense, or with just their small force, and they're going to see what God will do. So in verse 12, we heard the Philistines' response to their presence. They make themselves seen by the Philistines, who are at the garrison, in verse 12. And in verse 12 we read, "And the men of the garrison answered Jonathan and his armor-bearer, and they said, 'Come up to us, and let us show you something. We want to show you something.' And so they challenged them, and sure enough, in verse 12 still, Jonathan accepts the challenge. Says, "And Jonathan said to his armor-bearer, 'Go up after me, for Netanam Yahweh Beyad Yisrael,'" for Yahweh has given them, Netanam, "into the hand, the Yad of Israel." So we pick up with verse 13 and the clash between Jonathan and his armor-bearer and these Philistines. "Vayal Yonatan al Yadav al Ragalav, Venose Kelav Akarav." And Jonathan went up, by Yaal, upon his hands and upon his feet. So it's a steep incline up to where this garrison is. So he's crawling on his hands and his feet. Venose Kelav, and the one carrying his Kali, his equipment, his weapons, his armor-bearer, in other words, Akarav, after him. So here they go, up towards the Philistines, Jonathan and his armor-bearer behind him. And the narrative records for us pretty straightforwardly and decisively, "Vayipalu lifnei Yonatan," and they fell before Jonathan, that they are the Philistines, "Venose Kelav," and his armor-bearer, "Memotate Akarav." Memotate is a poleal participle. When you see a mame performative with a schwa under it, that's a good clue that you have a PL participle. But this doesn't form up as a typical PL participle. It has this motate form, a poleal form. This is how you form basically a PL meaning of a hollow root. You'll recall that hollow roots don't normally occur in the PL. So if you want to give a PL sense to a hollow root, you have to put it in this poleal form. The root is mote, and mote normally means to die, but in the PL, or here the poleal, it has the sense of to kill or to slay, and usually when it's used, it really is a good example of the PL having this intensifying sense. So there's this intensive killing going on. In fact, Holiday suggests to deal a death blow. So what's going on here in this verse then? We're in 1 Samuel chapter 14, verse 13, for those of you who are just joining us here. What's going on here, Jonathan and his armor-bearer have gone up, and then it says in the second half of the verse, "And they fell before Jonathan, and the Nose Kelav, his armor-bearer, was dealing the death blow after him." So they're kind of giving them the 1-2 punch here. Jonathan is coming through, and they are falling before him, and his armor-bearer is dealing the death blow after him. He's finishing them off, you could say. Any questions on verse 13? pretty straightforward. One thing that could trip you up a little bit in verse 13 is if you don't notice over the word Jonathan in the middle of the verse, Yonatan, the two dots, the disjunctive accent above the word, which helps you to separate off Jonathan from his armor bearer that comes next. Otherwise, you might want to read it as Jonathan ascended on his hands and his knees and his armor bearer after him, and they fell before Jonathan and his armor bearer. You might take the Philistines falling as being Lifne, not only Lifne Yonatan, but also Lifne Nose Kalav. And that would get you in trouble because you wouldn't know what to do with the participle then, the poleo participle which follows. But that disjunctive accent above Jonathan tells you that the sense is they fell before Jonathan, pause, and now you have a new clause introduced here, and his armor bearer was dealing the death blow behind him. Verse 14. Vatahi hamaka harishana asher hika yonatan venose kelav kaesarim ish kabakasi ma'ana tzemed sade. And it was, and notice it's not vahi here, but vatahi, and it feminine was. And the it that was is the ha-makah. Makah is a noun that's formed from the root naka, to smite or to strike, and it means a blow, or it can even mean a plague, but here the sense is the blow. And the blow, which blow? Ha-rishona. Anybody recognize the word rishon there? Rishon means first. It's an irregular ordinal number from Echad, one. And the first blow, Asher Hika Yonatan, Benose Kelav, and the first blow which Jonathan and his armor bearer struck, Hika. That's the Hithil perfect from Naka. Hebrew loves to do this. It loves to use cognate words where you have a verb and an object that are built on the same form. They feared a great fear. They struck a great blow, but striking, or struck a great strike, you might say, in English, to capture that same sense. So, and the first blow which Jonathan and his armor bearer struck was about, take the kaf there before ka'asarim, as like as, according to here, about, approximately, in other words, was about etharim. Etharim is the plural of ether, 10, and when you make 10 plural, it means 900, that has its own word. The plural of 10 is 20 in Hebrew. To say 20 in Hebrew, you use the plural of 10. So about 20 each, about 20 men. So their first assault here, they took down about 20 men. And then you have a very strange expression, these last four words. The Septuagint reads something completely different here. So already at the time that the Septuagint was translated, it seems that there were some problems in the text here, and they were trying to make sense of it themselves. The first word, k-ba-k-tsi. K-tsi means half, a part of, or oftentimes half of. And you have k and b on the front of it. So about, with, or among, half of ma'ana. Ma'ana. Half of a ma'ana is a furrow, actually. It's a technical word, an agricultural term for a furrow that's plowed, the plowing line. Half of a ma'ana, semed sadeh. Semed is a word, the verbal root here is to join together or to pair up, and it oftentimes refers to as a noun a couple or a pair, but it also is a technical term, another agricultural term in Hebrew that refers to an acre, actually not exactly the same measure of what we call an acre, but a certain amount of square footage. It's a square footage, it's kind of a field size measurement. And they think that it probably means the amount of land that could be plowed by a pairing of oxen in one day. So that's why it comes from this root pair, semed. So a semed of a sade, of a field. The sense here then seems to be in the Hebrew, in the Masoretic text, with these words, that it's describing the area which they've taken here. So their first blow was about 20 men in half a furrow of an acre of field. So in this little area, they've taken down 20 men, and like I said, the Septuagint does something completely different. The Septuagint here actually uses the word en by means of, and it gives three different kinds of weapons. So it says with, I'm trying to remember, I think it says with rocks and slings and pebbles of the field. So sadeh, the last word, their field is still in the mix, but it's something very different. And the sense seems to be here that maybe that that's all Jonathan and his armor bearer are using. Or perhaps it means that's all that the Philistines were armed with. But that wouldn't be very consistent with the sense of the passage all along where they've been so superior militarily to the Israelites. So it's an interesting interesting and difficult passage there at the end of that verse 14. Any other questions on 14? Okay, let's go on to verse 15. Vatehi karada b'makaneh basadeh uvakol ha'am ha-matzav v'ha mashkit haradu gam hema. Let's pause there. And it was another feminine vav consecutive imperfect form of haya. And what was karada? Karada is from the root karad, which means to tremble or to fear. This is a noun form, so trembling or fearing. And there was trembling in the camp of the field, or in the camp in the field, and among Bakol, all the people. Now notice the disjunctive accent above Ha'am there, so you pause. And now you have further nouns. Ha-matzav, we've seen that noun in previously in this chapter. The garrison, the ha-mashkit. Mashkit is a hithil participle from shakat. Shakat means to act ruinously or spoil. And so it's, here is a substantive participle, means the spoiling one or the ruining one. But it's actually a technical military term here that means the raiding one. So the ones who are appointed within the military to go out and do raiding, apparently. So the garrison and the raider, karadu, again the same root, to tremble or to fear, they feared, and then the narrator emphasizes this by saying, gam hema, also them, or even them. So even the ones staffing the garrisons and the raiders feared. Vatirgaz ha'aretz. Now this is an interesting addition to the story. And the earth ragazed. The earth trembled. A synonym of karad. The earth trembled. Vatehi lekerdat Elohim. And it became, oftentimes haya here, you have vatehi le. And oftentimes haya plus le is the idiom to become. So it's feminine here with that tav performative. And it or she became. But it's not referring to any specific antecedent. It's not referring to earth here. It's just referring to the whole situation. And it became a fear. This is the same word that we had at the beginning of verse 15 here, karada, but here it's in construct. And it became a fear of Elohim, a fear of God. Now this is an interesting expression. It became a fear of God. The grammars list this as an example of a certain construction of the superlative in Hebrew, where if you want to say that something is a great, an extremely great something, extremely excessive something, you put it in construct with Yahweh or Yah or Elohim or El. And there's a handful of examples of this in the Old Testament, but and it uses, among the examples, all these names of God are used. And the sense then is here just a very great fear. So a fear of God, maybe that sounds real pious on the surface, but based on analogy with other occurrences of this idiom in the Old Testament, it probably just has a sense of a super great fear. A heaven big fear, right? A divinely big fear. Alright. Any questions on verse 15? Verse 16 then. Vayiru ha-sofim l'sha'ul b'gib'at binyamin. And the watching ones, the sofim, the watching ones, l'sha'ul, belonging to Saul, they saw, from ra'ah, the first verb there. The watching ones of Saul saw, and where are they, and where is Saul with his watching ones? At Gibeah of Benjamin here. So, and the watching ones of Saul at Gibeah of Benjamin saw, or they looked. V'hine, and behold, Hehamon Gamog, or sorry, Namog, Vayelek, Vahelon. They looked and behold, a hamon it can either mean a great commotion or a great noise or a great crowd. So you get the sense here. It can either refer to the people or to the noise or to the franticness and the confusion. Tumult is a good old-fashioned English word that sort of sums up all these senses for kamoz here. And behold, the tumult, namog. Mog oftentimes means to melt or to dissolve, but in the Nifal, like it is here, it has the sense of, at least the lexicons indicate, to heave about or to move back and forth, to shift. So, and behold, the tumult was moving. Vayelek, and it went. Vahalom. Halom means here or to here, and it doesn't make any sense here in this passage with an and in front of it. Vahalom. So, and the tumult shifted about, and it went, or the crowd below, it's talking about their observation of the Philistines here. So the watchmen of Saul are looking down on the Philistines, and they see this great crowd below starting to shift all about. And it's going by Yalek, and it went Vahalom, and to here. The Septuagint here translates Ethnen Kai Ethnen, which means from here and from here. Yeah, the idiom is here and there. And so the guess is that Hebrew has left out a halom, that the MT has left out what was originally another halom in front of the vav, so that originally it would have read halom the halom, to hear and to hear, which would make a little more sense. So look, and there's this great confusion and tumult. It's heaving about to here and to there. Verse 17, Vayomer Shaul la'am asher ito, and Saul said to the people who were ito with him, pick do. Nah. This is the imperative, masculine plural from Pakad. And it can mean a lot of things, to muster, to inspect, to appoint, to deliver. Here, the sense is to inspect or to call roll, and you'll see why. And in fact, a lot of English translations even say number or count. Count, please, or number, please, take roll call. Pick, do, nah. U-ra-u, and see, another imperative here from, plural imperative from Ra'a, mi halak me imanu, who has gone, right, straightforward halak there, who has gone me imanu, from with us. He has gone from us. In other words, there's a war going on the field down below. It looks like all of a sudden there's this great tumult and all this shifting, but Saul didn't give any orders to attack. And so he wants to know, who's gone? What's going on here? Why is there fighting going on down below? So who has gone from among us? Vayifkadu v'hine ein Yonatan v'nose Kalav. And, or so, they pakaded, they mustered the people and called roll, they inspected, and behold, ein, there was not Jonathan nor his armor bearer. So who's missing? These two guys, when they take stock of who's around. Any questions there? Okay, continue with the Vav consecutives here, the main storyline. By Yomer Sha'ul, La Akia, Hagesha Aron Ha'Elohim. And Saul said to Akia, you'll remember his name perhaps from the beginning of chapter 14 last week. He said to Akia, bring near, this is Hagesha, a Hithil imperative from Nagash. Nagash means to approach or to come near, in the Hithil, to cause to come near or to bring near. So bring near Aron HaElohim. What's the Aron HaElohim? The Ark of God. Bring near the Ark of God. Ki haya Aron HaElohim bayom hahu u b'nei Yisrael. For the Ark of God was, ki haya Aron HaElohim, for the Ark of God was bayom hahu, in that day, U v'nei Yisrael, and the children of Israel. Didn't make any sense, did it? Okay, there are problems with this text. Part of the confusion, or perhaps part of the solution, might lie again in the Septuagint text, which seems throughout this passage to perhaps be a little more recognizable or a little more consistent, which may mean that they've just fixed things, or it may mean that they had a better text originally that they were working with. The Septuagint actually doesn't say bring near the Ark of God. It says bring near the ephod of God. Ephod was the high priestly vestment that had the Ummim and the Thummim. And so before they go into battle, they inquire of the Lord, shall we go down to battle? So he's saying to Akia, back in verse 3, we had Akia introduced to us. It's talking about all the people who were with Saul back in 14, verse 3. The people who were with him, verse 2 said, were about 600 men. And also, verse 3, Akia, the son of Aktuv, the brother of Ichabod, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the priest of Yahweh at Shiloh, who was bearing or carrying ephod, the ephod. So just back in verse 3, in the same chapter, we have Akia introduced to us as the one who is the priest of God in the midst of this little group with Saul, and he's carrying the ephod. So it makes sense that the Septuagint here reads Saul saying, bring near the ephod, but you still have the problem at the end of the verse. It says, for, and if you change again the second arc to instead of Aron to Ephod, for the ephod of God was in that day, and then all of a sudden, and the children of Israel. So we have no Hebrew manuscript improvements on this. This is what the Hebrew manuscripts read, but the editors suggest that instead of reading and the children of Israel here, we read with the children of Israel, like Eim or something like that, or even a buh among the children of Israel. The Septuagint reads Enopion, before the children of Israel. And it actually says, and it also has Akia's name in the second clause, for he was the one bearing the ephod in that day before the children of Israel. It's talking about Akia. Bill?
Is it normal for the Septuagint to digress so much from
Is it normal for the Septuagint to differ so much from the Hebrew text? Yes, but not everywhere. different books of the Old Testament really vary in terms of how close the Septuagint is and how many differences there are. But you'll oftentimes find that when it's very difficult to make sense of the Hebrew, the Septuagint will have a smoother reading or a more sensible reading. But like I mentioned earlier, that can mean one of two things. It can mean that they had a better Hebrew text that made good sense, and they're actually giving us what was the Hebrew original in the Septuagint, or it can mean that the Hebrew text that was in front of them, they too had trouble making sense of, and so they came up with a smoother, they had to come up with some meaningful translation, so they had to supply something based on the context. And here I don't, here I guess I'd be inclined to follow the Septuagint, many translators do, but most English translations, I believe, follow the Hebrew. They say the Ark, bring near the Ark of God here, rather than the ephod. Yeah, good question. All right, where are we? Verse 19. Actually, we're just about out of time. We probably have time for verse 19 here and bring us to that paragraph marker. Vayhi ad deber Sha'ul el ha-Kohen. And it came to pass, this is the temporal clause here, and it happened ad, while. Oftentimes ad means until or as far as, but temporally it can mean while or during. And it happened while Saul spoke, El HaKohen, to the priest, that's Akia. And now this Vav here introduces the main clause, V'hehamon, that the tumult, or the noise, or the crowd, here probably noise, that the noise which B'machaneh Philistim, the noise which was in the camp of the Philistines, Vayelek Halok Varav. This is an example of an infinitive absolute here, Halok, being used adverbially. Infinitive absolutes, as you know, are used most oftentimes with a verb of the same root to indicate an intensifying, not so much an intensifying, but an emphasis, surely or certainly something happened or something will happen. But the other very common use for the infinitive absolute, well, the second common use is as a verbal substitute for any other finite verb form, but the third very common use of the infinitive absolute is as an adverb of some kind. It's used adverbially, and that's what's going on here. And it went, or you could say even, and it grew, or it went by Yalek, and it went continually, I suppose you'd say very woodenly, and it went continually, halok, varav, and increased, or and more. So, and the tumult, while he's speaking, the tumult continued and increased. So the sense is, while he's speaking to the priest, all that's going on down below gets worse and worse. And we'll see in the next verse here that his plans, actually we can do a, oh, I didn't finish verse 19. We can finish it. Vayomer Sha'ul el HaKohen, and Saul said to the priest, Esof Yadaka, withdraw your hand. Esof means to gather up, but it can also mean to withdraw or to remove. So he's saying, remove your hand. So at first he summons the priest, says, bring the ephod. Then, as he's speaking to the priest and saying, bring the ephod, everything's getting worse and worse, and he says, withdraw your hand. In other words, never mind. And in the next verses, they're going to go straight to battle. So he has a good idea, let's inquire of the Lord first. But when the going gets tough, he decides, we'll inquire of the Lord later, it's time to go to war. Not necessarily a good decision, but that's what he does. That's enough for this.